ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 What text I forgot the first. 14. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Goswami said, when the second millennium overlapped the third, the great sage Vyasadeva was born to Parsara in the womb of Satyavati, the daughter of Vasu. One more. Nakarachit Sarasvatya. Once upon a time, he, Vyasadeva, as the sun rose, took his morning ablution, in the water of the Sarasvati and sat alone to concentrate. Sage Vyasadeva saw anomalies in the duties of the millennium. This happened on the earth in different ages due to unforeseen forces in the course of time. Namagyanatimidandasya janaganatulakayam chakshusmiritam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri shaitanya manavistam javitam jena bhutale svayam upakaramaya dadati svaparantikam shri krishna chaitanya bravanityananda shri adaita gadadha shri vasari gaura bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Satyavati. She was the daughter of the fisherman. So not a very high class birth, but she had some, you can say, pious activities from past life. One of the features of her that her body emanated a wonderful smell that could be smelled for about a mile around. So she was also sometimes engaged in bringing people across the river in the boat, and so she brought this Parsaram, and he was attracted to her. So they conceived Vyasadeva on an island. I think they stopped on an island, and that's where he has the name. He was born on an island, something like that. I don't know the exact detail. But anyway, this was arrangement of the Lord because Vyasadeva was a literary incarnation, Shakti Vaishnavatar. He was coming from above. He was sent down for a specific purpose. He wasn't born out of karma, but he was sent by the Lord to compile this literature. You see, he compiled so much Vedic literature. Literary incarnation, just to give the people in the Kali Yuga especially, because this happened not so long ago, in the course of history, 5,000 years ago is not very long. So he could see at that time that what the Kali Yuga was leading to, how people would become so much immersed or engrossed in material things, as Prabhupada is mentioning. And so he wanted to offer them some remedy for this disease. It's a disease. For the soul to be attached to matter is a disease condition. Just like we say, if a person is mad, let's say a grown man is very attached to a little doll, and he's maybe a 50-year-old man, he's going to the office, but he's always keeping his doll with him. And he's very attached to it. If anybody touches it, oh, no, don't. You think he's crazy. His mental, some disease is there in his mind that he's very attached to a little play doll. this we consider as a disease. Similarly, for the pure spirit soul, to be attached to anything material is like a disease. Why are you attached? You have nothing to do with this thing that you're attached to. your nature is completely different. That thing will pass, but you'll remain. this is a simple fact, that you're a different quality of energy. But in the material life, of course, everyone is attached. But in the Kali Yuga, especially, they become attached. They become so attached that they are not at all receptive to the message of the Lord. So, the saintly peer persons, they are sorry to see this. And so they devise different remedies how to benefit such diseased people. Just like let's say the United Nations, they're sorry to see so many people have AIDS. So they make a program to give them information, how they can avoid it, and how to give them medicine and so on. they have compassion. So similarly, the sadhus have compassion. They see the real disease, and therefore they They're not happy to note that. And so they tax their brain how to alleviate that disease. And so the preaching mission is there to inject in the dull brains of the sleeping populace some idea of spiritual life. I was just reading something on the internet. A woman was being supposed to, you know, being very liberal, saying that she, belief was that the soul is there at the moment of conception. But she doesn't want to impose her beliefs on others. So if others want to commit abortion, then she gives her blessing for that. So that may be considered as very, just like Arjuna was also giving so many good arguments from the moral point of view. Well, this may be, in the modern day especially, this kind of argument may be considered very, praiseworthy, that she's not imposing her belief on anybody. I mean, we can't force anybody to believe anything. If we believe that the soul is there at the moment of conception, you don't believe, so I can't impose my belief on you. But you see, there's a higher position. The position is that we don't want to see you suffer. Therefore, we want to save you from your own lower nature. Therefore, we make law. No abortion. You may not believe, but still, we have a power we're going to enforce. The king would enforce the principle of religion. They may criticize, why is the king beating this, or ready to kill this personification of Kali? Maharaj Prishu was ready to kill. He wants to eat meat. He wants to kill the cow. What's so bad about that? But no, Maharaj Prishu is ready to enforce the principle for the benefit. Just like a child, if a child goes to eat something dirty, then the mother will say, no, don't put that in your mouth. Because the mother doesn't want the child to become diseased. That's a concern for them. They take it out of their hand and wash their hands. Say, no, you can't. This is dirty. Don't eat this. So, in the same way, those who actually have vision, they have responsibility to guide the ordinary people, the citizens. And if they abnegate that decision and just say, this is a free world. Everybody is free to do whatever they want, think whatever they want. Then that is less. That may be better than some fanatic. But that also is not the highest standard. The higher standard is to benefit people and not just let them, go to hell and feel very, like a bystander. Think, what can I do? If they want to believe, they can believe. We can't check that. No, we have a right to check because there's another life involved, the life of the child in the womb. So we'll make every effort to avoid because not only will that child be affected, but we'll also be affected because the sinful activities become so prominent, then the whole atmosphere becomes disturbed. It's a simple fact. Just like we're burning the smoke in the church. Yesterday we saw it, the day before. So much smoke was coming out. So if every house does that, I was just hearing on the radio that there was a 1952 in England, because they didn't have good quality coal, they were exporting all the good quality coal, so they had to burn, just like in Poland they do the same thing sometimes. They burn the less quality coal, and they export the good quality coal for getting cash. So this one in London, 1952, there was a special kind of weather pattern that the cold air was keeping everything compressed, and people were burning the bad coal, and so many thousands of people died in London, just to, 40 years ago, in advanced, modern society. So the point I was trying to make is that if everybody pollutes, then everybody will be affected. If one person was burning coal, it wouldn't have mattered. Because that so many people were doing it, then it had effect. Similarly, in the Kali Yuga, because everyone is sinful, then everybody becomes affected. We'll also become affected. We have to live here. So we don't want to see the people sinful, because when they're sinful, then they can do anything. It becomes very dangerous. It becomes a very dangerous place. When the people in general have no more motive goodness, that means they become miserable or ignorant. So the people in general are ignorant and miserable, then it becomes a very dangerous place for us. Because who knows what they may do? When they're so miserable, they can attack us for no reason. They can create a havoc on the roads because they're so aggressive, they're miserable, and they don't care. They lose their sensibility. They lose self-preservation instinct. Everyone wants to live, but these people are so miserable, they don't care if they live or not, just like these terrorists.
Or sometimes we see on the road, people drive like they don't care if they're going to die or not. They're suicidal because life is so bad for them. Why is life so bad? Because they're sinful. So my point is that we do have a right to preach. And if we have power, we have a right to enforce the law of principle. We want to encourage the king, yes. You should stop this abortion. People don't know what they're doing. It's like they were crucifying Christ. He said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And that was on his personal account. He could forgive them. But Christ didn't. The Father didn't forgive them. God won't forgive you. And therefore you create disturbance. So this is the preaching spirit. Not that we just think, oh, everybody can do their own thing. It doesn't matter. I can't impose my belief on anyone else. We're not imposing. We're just explaining. This is the principle of religion. And the king has a duty. The executive head has the duty to enforce that principle of religion. This is the idea. So, Vyasadeva was such a great soul. He could see that the people were suffering. He was unhappy to not only were suffering, but were going to suffer more and more. So he took the trouble to compile this Srimad Bhagavatam, especially for the benefit, to give light to the people in the Kali Yuga, especially. Kali Doshane Re Rajan Asti He Kamahami. The one good quality of this otherwise very sinful age is that we have this Krishna Katha, Krishna Kirtan. So hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the Krishna Katha. This is the remedy. So if we do it regularly, even though we've heard these things before, still, by regularly hearing, imperceptibly we become liberated. Imperceptibly we'll become free from the bad habits, the anarthas, that trouble us. We're all troubled with some anartha, some bad habits, lust and greed or whatever, envy. So if we take this remedy of sadhana bhakti, regular hearing Bhagavatam, chanting our rounds, rising early, and gradually that will be removed. We should have that faith, just like we were hearing this morning in the nectar instruction. How? Devotional service is the only auspicious activity. The karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, whatever result they get is temporary, so it's not auspicious. But devotional activities are permanent. So we should be enlivened that we're performing by some good fortune. We have opportunity to perform devotional service. And then therefore we're creating a bank account, a spiritual bank account. Spiritual assets are there that we can bridge over this material world and enter into the spiritual world on the strength of these assets. It's like Ambarish Maharaj. He was always performing devotional service in one of the nine different ways. And because of that, he became so, you can say, qualified that even the greatest yogi was defeated. The Vasamuni had to come and fall at his feet. So imperceptibly, he didn't, think, oh, now I'm going to become powerful, I can defeat the yogis. No. He just went on with his devotional service, and then Krishna protected him. This is the process. We may not be very powerful, we may not have any good qualities, but if we just represent Śrīla Prabhupāda in Prampara, then Krishna will protect us. We have to have that faith. Any questions? So the thing, undermine that faith, we start to think that Śrīla Prabhupāda is an ordinary man, that he's conditioned by this or that. Then, this is the biggest offense, Vaishnava Viraj. If we keep maintaining this kind of offense, then our devotional creeper will become stunted. Won't be able to grow nicely. Therefore, the verse is there. We should have implicit faith in the spiritual master and the Vedic literature. Then we can. You know that verse, anybody?
It's from one Purana.